It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios. Welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You're all right.
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4 to 1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
I'm saying the swamp won and the American taxpayer lost. And here's the frustrating thing. We were so poised to win. 3 weeks ago, we sent a bill to the Senate. Chuck Schumer shut down the government, didn't pay our troops because he said amnesty was more important. Earlier last week, the House sent the same bill, the exact same bill to the Senate, except we did one thing different. We funded the military for the entire year. And instead of standing firm in that position, our leadership said, no, no, no. Let's do what Washington always does. Let's just spend more on everything. Let's just grow government, give in to the Democrats instead of fight and stand firm and do what the people elect us to do. They gave in to the Democrats, and we got this boondoggle that we passed. I didn't vote for it, but that passed on Friday morning.
Congressman Jim Jordan from Ohio opining about what happened with the budget Thursday night. You probably remember, or if you don't, I want to make sure you do. That Senator Rand Paul did a sort of a mini filibuster standing before the Senate exposing the dreadful spending that was coming out in this budget that will add $1 trillion to our debt with more military spending, 100% more than 100%. It's multiple hundreds of percents. I can't remember the exact number, more than the president even asked for, throwing money at really virtually everything when they didn't have to, because the Democrats are always blaming the Republicans, as you know, for a shutdown. The Republicans have said they were really scared of that, so they just couldn't stand on principle because there might be a shutdown after all. Well, now we know. I've known this for some time, and I've been telling you, but it's absolutely true that the leadership of the Republican Party is not on our side. They really aren't. They talk like they are because they like to get our votes, but honestly, they're on their own side. I was watching a documentary on Teddy Roosevelt just a couple of nights ago, and it just struck me the similarities between the corruption in Washington at that time, where it was all this big way for all these guys to get rich, and they were doing favors and legislation for their friends, and they were enriching themselves, and I think that's pretty much what we're seeing, and I'm going to lay that out for you just a little bit. It'll just be a little touch of it, but let me just say that Senator Rand Paul, in an act of courage, I don't care how much he's ridiculed, that took a lot of guts, and God bless him for it, a little light shed on what was actually happening. Of course, the government was only shut down maybe for an hour because the bill was passed in the Senate, and then it was quickly sent to the House and passed in the chamber in the early morning hours. And of course, what happened was that Paul Ryan sidestepped his own conference, the Republicans, and used Democratic votes to pass it. The House Freedom Caucus, I don't know how many of them, but most of them, I would say, opposed it. Dave Brat, Congressman Dave Brat, issued this statement. I oppose this budget deal because it is a generational theft and leaves our country with $1 trillion deficits for deficits for the indefinite future. The drafting of this 652-page bill excluded the entire House from the deal-making discussions, and the result lacks any element of fiscal restraint. In total, the bill grows discretionary government spending. That's anything that's not military. That's like, that's just whatever they decide they want to, like if it's opioids or increasing child care or whatever, that's discretionary spending. It increases it by over 13%. We are already leaving our kids with $21 trillion in debt and $100 trillion in unfunded liabilities. This bill fails to rein in already the massive federal government. So that's a statement from Congressman Dave Brat, at least a portion of his statement. I want to hear you to hear from David Stockman. I heard this clip over the weekend. David is the former director of OMB. He was on with Neil Cavuto, who, by the way, I love Neil. And if you are looking for someone you think you can trust, I think Neil's show, even though it happens earlier in the day for some of us, it's like 4 o'clock, I think, Eastern Standard Time. He really is a solid source of information. But David Stockman was on his show, former director of the OMB, which is what Mick Mulvaney is doing right now. And this was his opening remark.
Who is going to absorb the $1.8 trillion of new debt that will be flooding into the bond market? We're going to have a collision. The interest rate is heading towards 3% or more. That will totally undermine this phony, fantastic stock market bubble we have. Trump is walking into a miserable trap that he's going to pay for dearly, and the Republicans.
All right, so that was his opening statement. Let me just say the New York Times has this headline, Republicans learn to love deficit spending they once loathed. The beginning is a big government is officially back in style. Republicans propelled themselves to power in Washington by promising an end to fiscal recklessness. They are now embracing the kind of free spending and budget deficits they once claimed to loathe. Of course, the irony here is the New York Times has been, you know, a champion for the left, which has increased spending beyond measure. But now, of course, this is another platform upon which they can destroy and undermine Republicans. Of course, Republicans did their share to step up to the leadership. Leadership, could I please say, leadership, stepped up to the plate and volunteered for this kind of criticism because that's exactly what they did. In fact, I want to read this. This is from the New York Times. The long-term implications of all this borrowing put the United States on track to ultimately owe more to its creditors than the economy produces over the course of a year. The Nonpartisan Committee for a Responsible Federal Budget projects that the United States will run $2 trillion annual budget deficits by 2027 and have a debt-to-gross domestic product ratio of 105%, a level not seen since the end of World War II. Of course, here's the thing. They didn't say anything about that when the Democrats were doing it. And the Democrats ran us into this hole. Now the Republican leadership seems happily to take us down further. I want you to hear the rest of what David Stockman has to say because it's pretty gripping stuff. Let's listen.
Yesterday will go down as the night of fiscal infamy because they have this two-year budget deal. They have opened the floodgates to a fiscal calamity that can't be stopped. There were three things holding back the tide. Number one, those sequester caps, gone. $150 billion overnight to defense and non-defense that we don't need, that we can't afford.
Yeah, we'll never get those back.
Two, the debt ceiling, gone until March 2019. They can borrow whatever they want. It'll be $22 trillion national debt before they even begin to pick up the pieces. Number three, the Freedom Caucus in the House was holding back the tide. They took them out back last night and shot them. This is the battle of the little bighorn. But they were betrayed by Speaker Ryan, who will go down as a coward, a hypocrite, and a dilettante. When that bill came over from the Senate, the typical swamp deal from McConnell, who's been there 54 years.
The president and Schumer, was for this as well, though, David.
Okay, and Schumer, who's been there 43 years.
Right.
When it came over, he should have said, no dice. We are not going to blow another $400 billion on top of the $1 trillion national debt we already have because of the tax cut. Instead, he said, I'm taking it to the floor, which meant the Freedom Caucus was obliterated. The government is now being run by Pelosi, by Schumer, by Trump, and by the military-industrial complex.
Okay, I'm sure he had an ending to that sentence, but you get the point. David Stockman, former director of the OMB. And if you read further, The Hill had an article must have been the day or the day before the budget, by Alexander Bolton. And it lays out the special tax breaks in this bill, this huge spending bill. And, of course, it turns out that many of them benefited many of the senators. Amazing, isn't it? In fact, in Mitch McConnell's case, it managed to give a three-year tax depreciation for racehorses, which was a top priority of the National Thoroughbred Racing Association, which is in McConnell's home state. For the Democrats, for Schumer, it also extends special expensing rules for film and television productions, giving a boost to Hollywood, which is, of course, a Democratic fundraising hub, and to live theater productions, which is a boon to Schumer's home state of New York. That provision is going to cost the government $1.3 billion in the year 2018. NASCAR track owners will get a share in the $37 million in tax benefit thanks to an extension of the seven-year recovery period for motorsports entertainment complexes. Who does that help? Debbie Stabenow, who was in Michigan as the Michigan International Speedway, Dean Heller, who represents the Las Vegas Motor Speedway, Pat Roberts, Kansas, Richard Burr, North Carolina, NASCAR hotbed. I could go on and on. I mean, I could read this. I could, but it would take me the whole time. Oh, of course, I have to tell you about Senator Cornyn. Senator Cornyn has been holding up a nomination for a gentleman named Russ Vought. You may remember that Russ was, when he came up for nomination, I believe it was in April of last year. Russ was really raked over the coals by Senator Bernie Sanders because of his Christian faith. Do you remember that, anyone? So Russ Vought's nomination to assistant under Mick Mulvaney has been held up all these months by guess who? Senator John Cornyn. And why was he holding it up? Let me just read. He was holding it up because he wanted more money for flood victims in Texas. So he chooses Russ Vought, whose nomination is important to many people. So I'm going to read this from the Washington Examiner. This is October 2017. A congressional veteran, Vought probably expected that sort of partisan obstruction, but what the budget wonk never accounted for was his kidnapping. Cornyn more or less snuck up from behind, threw a bag over Vought's head, and dragged him into the back of a waiting van. What's worse, when Axios reported the abduction, Cornyn tried to make the rest of Texas complicit. He blamed Governor Abbott, Ted Cruz, Governor Abbott has not weighed in on this. I think he was silent on it, and Cruz has supported Russ Vought from the very beginning. So now Cornyn has lifted that. Good for him. But he lifted that because he got, I think, $20 million in more spending in Texas. And that's over all the millions of dollars that had already been sent down for a disaster relief. Look, it's not a matter of not having concern about NASCAR or even about theater. I love live theater, or even I like movies. Maybe we might want to think about, it's not that the spending itself is in itself wicked. You could make a case for almost all of it. For the child healthcare program, you could go on until the cows come home making reasons why this is great spending. But it is like your budget and mine. If you've ever had a credit card that you ran up the limit and you watched the balance balloon because of the high interest rates, and then you realized, I'll never be able to pay this back. That's exactly what they have done. And it may be on your credit card you bought some really good things, that stuff for your kids that they needed and stuff that you needed. But the spending is relentless and the bills have to be paid. And so it is with the federal government. So I also, from an insider in regard to Paul Ryan, I heard him make some statement afterwards that just made me sick, honestly, because Speaker Ryan has stabbed conservatives in the back. He worked with Nancy Pelosi, and he worked with Mitch McConnell and Chuck Schumer to develop this budget. And then they basically got it by the conservative members of Congress because the conservatives in the Freedom Caucus didn't have enough votes to override when the Democrats came along to vote with them on this budget. So that's the way this thing goes down. Paul Ryan is calling for entitlement reform. He's saying that when we reform entitlements, we'll fix all of this. But the problem is that the process that they used will deny them the ability to use reconciliation, which means that they can pass something on a 51-vote margin. They gave that up in this. And they will never, never reform entitlement spending. Not on Paul Ryan and Mitch McConnell's watch, that's for sure. And certainly not on the Democrats' watch. All right, lots more to tell you. So happy Monday, by the way. It is the President's Day. And I want to talk to you about Abraham Lincoln in a second, plus a lot more news. All right, Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Hey, my name's Brant. You ever make a change and then wonder, why didn't I do this a long time ago? That's what's happening for thousands of people with regard to their health care. They're joining MediShare, and then they're wondering, why didn't I already do this? For most members, it costs less than half what they were paying for their old health plan. There's a huge provider network, too. You can customize your plan, and this is awesome. MediShare members can go online with a doctor 24/7. So if you need a prescription for the flu or something, it's so convenient for you and your family. So yeah, this is one of those why did I wait on this things. And if you don't love your current health plan, you're not stuck with it. You can join MediShare anytime. By the way, to give you an idea, the typical savings for a family, about $500 a month. It just makes so much sense. Check it out. They're super easy to talk to. Call 855-PSALM-23. That's 855-PSALM-23. 855-PSALM-23.
When it comes to the issue of trafficking, it's not just girls that we're talking about. Truth is that even boys are at risk.
Oh my God, we'd be on the bed doing wrong things.
In Mumbai, India, in the red light districts, there are young men like Najish.
I rolled over several times and broke many bones. This scar here on my forehead, this scar is from that night.
It happens every day, and it must stop. And it can. That is why American Family Radio and India Partners are teaming up to provide a safe house outside the city where young boys are rescued. With your gift of just $7.08, you provide a day of safety and shelter at a new India Partners safe house. Coming up here on American Family Radio, we're going to show you how your gifts can rescue a boy and make this new safe house a reality. Learn more at AFR.net.
This is Frank Gaffney with the Secure Freedom Minute. In March 2007, seven of America's finest warriors were ambushed in an Afghan village. They courageously fought their way out of the trap, but soon discovered that the men who unsuccessfully tried to kill them had nonetheless inflicted devastating harm on their reputations. The international press and their own chain of command claimed they had murdered innocent women and children in that village. Since there was no factual basis for that charge, these Marine special operators were soon cleared of wrongdoing. But the stigma recklessly inflicted by senior officers was not undone until now. Thanks to the tireless efforts of Representative Walter Jones and others, the group known as the MARSOC 7 has just been fully exonerated by the Marine Corps Commandant. The MARSOC 7's selfless service must next be formally recognized, complemented by our help securing the gainful civilian employment these men deserve. This is Frank Gaffney.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
Sandy Rios back with you. Yes, we are continuing our little partnership with India Partnership. Not so little. It's because you're so generous, it becomes a very big thing, especially for the kids who are in the middle of being trafficked. In India. And of course, this is sexual trafficking, boys and girls as young as eight. Isn't that something? Don't even try to imagine it. I just can't fathom the wickedness and the perversion that's becoming mainstream in this world. It really is shocking. And so India Partners gets these little kids out of these dangerous situations. They give them a safe house, full room and board, a full-time Christian school, private tutoring, medical attention. Can you imagine the medical needs? Counseling, and of course, best of all, most importantly of all, telling them about the love of Jesus and his forgiveness and his ability to restore their lives and give them hope. And so with that, $100 provides about 2 weeks of safety, $50 provides about a week of safety, and they've built a girl's, or at least they obtained a girl's safe house the last time we did this, and now they're working on this boy's new safe house. So that's what a lot of this money will go for. So I hope that you, if you haven't given yet, this is the week to do it. The number is 877-616-2396, 877-616-2396, or you can give online at AFR.net. That's AFR.net. This is President's Day. And, you know, I used to, I always have enjoyed going back in history because we have so little of it. And I want to take just a moment to tell you that One of my husband and my favorite places to visit in Washington, D.C. is the Lincoln Memorial. I can't tell you how many times we've ridden our bikes to the memorial, sat on the steps, watched the people just mill about. You can see that you're right over the basin. You can see the Washington Monument at the other end. And at any time of the day or night, it is gorgeous. But the most beautiful thing about it to me is when you mount the steps of the Lincoln Memorial and you see that huge statue of Abraham Lincoln, which is just so moving in itself. It's hard to explain if you haven't seen it. You have to see it. His countenance. It seems to capture all that we read about the character of the man and the way he led this country and the deep sorrow which he bore from his personal life, the loss of two sons, a wife who was not stable mentally. It's just, and then finally, you know, the hatred of the country, the weight of the war. Remember that the war did not go well. The Civil War did not go well. Abraham Lincoln had to finally step in and replace his generals and start. He was not a soldier, and he had to learn military tactics and start kind of running the thing himself until he finally found some generals. And it took so long and cost so many lives. And finally, when God brought peace and an end to the war, he was assassinated something like 2 weeks later. It really is one of the most dramatic stories of American history, and he remains one of my favorite presidents, maybe my favorite, I have to say. Washington would be, they would have to battle each other because both men, their personal stories are just absolutely gripping. And Abraham Lincoln, although he memorized the Bible and quoted great passages of it and grew up in a Christian home, I saw the Bible of his mom and dad, Thomas Lincoln, I can't remember his mother's name, at his birthplace home in Kentucky. It was just amazing. But Abraham Lincoln himself did not like the organized church. He did not like the division. He didn't like what he experienced when he went to church, so he didn't go to church. And many people thought he wasn't a Christian, but he could not stand the games and the structure, the trappings of religion in the church. And from my reading, which I've read a lot about Abraham Lincoln through the years, my understanding is that he did not really can come to Christ and have a personal relationship till after the death of his second son. And that just nearly did him in. And a pastor who came to visit with him finally prayed with him. And then you see a change in, you know, obviously he's steeped in scripture, so it's not like a revolutionary change, but you see a change in the man. And I tell you all that as a background, because when you mount those steps at the Lincoln Memorial, and you see that beautiful statue of him, it's not a statue, it's like this huge monument, that would be the better description, it's a very large rendering of him on this chair. But then you go on the rotunda to the right-hand side, you see on the wall his second inaugural address. Now, that happened just 45 days. He gave this, delivered this address 45 days before his assassination. And I want to read it to you. Can I do that? I can't tell you how many times I've stood in that rotunda and read this, and just I'm moved every time I read it. So will you allow me on this birthday, would be the 209th birthday of President Abraham Lincoln? Here it is. Of course, this is right after the war has ended. Neither party expected for the war the magnitude or the duration which it has already attained. Both read the same Bible and prayed to the same God, and each invokes his aid against the other. It may seem strange that any men should dare ask a just God's assistance in wringing their bread from the sweat of other men's faces, but let us judge not that we be not judged. The prayers of both could not be answered. He's talking about the North and the South. The prayers of both could not be answered. That of neither has been answered fully. The Almighty has his own purposes. And then he quotes scripture, "Woe unto the world because of offenses, for it must needs be that offenses come. But woe to the man by whom the offense cometh." End quote. Lincoln, if we shall suppose that American slavery is one of those offenses which, in the providence of God, must needs come, but which, having continued through his appointed time, he now wills to remove, and that he gives both North and South this terrible war as the woe due to those by whom the offense came, shall we discern therein any departure from those divine attributes which the believers in a living God always ascribe to him? Fondly do we hope, fervently do we pray, that this mighty scourge of war may speedily pass away. Yet, if God will that it continue until all the wealth piled by the bondsmen's 250 years of unrequited toil shall be sunk, and until every drop of blood drawn with the lash shall be paid by another, drawn with the sword, as was said 3,000 years ago, so still it must be said, the judgments of the Lord are true and righteous altogether. I'm going to go back on that because he's basically saying, well, first of all, let me just share with you that kids in public school now are being taught, at least certainly in, I can tell you in black schools in Chicago, this was the case for a long time ago, that Lincoln didn't care about slavery. It was a war over finances. So that's one thing that's being said. And I think that this particular second inaugural refutes that clearly. But also he's talking about the judgment that comes upon a people from their wickedness. And I want to read this to you again because his words are eloquent. They're from another century and a little hard to understand. So allow me to go back. Fondly do we hope, fervently do we pray, that this mighty scourge of war may speedily pass away. In other words, the horrible residue afterwards, the enmity between the sides. I'm filling the blanks in with that. Yet, if God will that it continue until all the wealth piled by the bondsmen's, and that's by the slave, all the wealth piled by the bondsmen's 250 years of unrequited toil shall be sunk. In other words, all the wealth that was acquired on the backs of slaves, and until every drop of blood drawn with the lash shall be paid by another drawn with the sword, as was said 3,000 years ago, so still it must be said, the judgments of the Lord are true and righteous altogether. So if we lose everything we have, in other words, as a country, everything because of what we did to black slaves, and if we lose everything that we gained on their backs, then he says, this is the sovereignty of God, the judgments of the Lord are true and righteous altogether. Then the last paragraph, with malice toward none, with charity for all, with firmness in the right, as God gives us to see the right, let us strive on to finish the work we are in, to bind up the nation's wounds, to care for him who shall have borne the battle, and for his widow and his orphan, to do all which may achieve and cherish a just and lasting peace among ourselves and with all nations. That was Abraham Lincoln, and of course that was 45 days before he was shot, after the war was over, just barely over, a second inaugural address. Isn't that something? I wanted you to know, to remember the kind of man that led us then. We've had a lot of great presidents. We have. We've had some remarkable characters. And we've had some men who really loved God. We've had some who did not and were completely, I wouldn't say completely godless. I wouldn't go so far as to say that, well, until the last decade or so. But in the early years, they almost all certainly embraced Christianity, because that was the fabric of our country at the time, to the different degree. You can understand it intellectually and still not be, you know, a person really committed to the Lordship of Christ, with all of your policies and thoughts conformed to the Scripture and to Christ's mind in all things. And we don't have a lot of those. I think Lincoln is one, Washington is one also. So it's just an amazing, and Teddy Roosevelt, I was just reading more about his personal faith, which was pretty amazing too, taught Sunday school and did so many things that he felt that God wanted him to do. He always said that he was there to make sure that the right thing was done. More to say about him on another day, but today, President Lincoln's birthday, 209 years old today if he had lived. Well, I'm glad he didn't. I often think that may sound odd to your ears, but I often think that the assassination of President Lincoln was a mercy for him because of all that he endured. If you just read even a smidgen of the things that he endured, your heart will break. And his wife went on to become more and more unhinged and ended up in an asylum. And I just think the grief that would have come after that may have matched the grief that came before it. And I think God spared him and brought him home. He had done what God had called him to do, and that's my personal opinion. I think that's the way God works sometimes. All right, so that was Lincoln's birthday. All right, so now let's see. I have lots of things to tell you. So let's change the subject a little bit here, but I got to figure out where I'm going. There was an interesting, this week, you're going to be hearing a lot about an immigration bill because Mitch McConnell promised the Democrats that he would bring up a discussion. My understanding is he plans to just open the floor for debate and let anybody add anything and present any amendments. And that's a pretty scary process, actually. There are a lot of concerns about this, but I'm going to give you the other side of this for a second, at least in regard to the Dreamers, because I heard a young man named Hilario Yanez, who had a few things to say about DACA himself. He was on Fox. He was on Fox last week. Let's listen.
Let me begin by first thanking Donald Trump for his leadership, his compassion, and also the courage to take on this issue. At the end of the day, he's a guy who wants to provide a pathway to citizenship for myself and really, make a difference in my life. So for that, I'm for that. I believe we need to have border security so this doesn't happen again. That's very important. And if a wall is necessary to add an extra layer for Border Patrol to do their job in a safe and responsible manner, then, I think it's necessary to fund it. The last couple of points is the diversity lottery. I think it's outdated. I think it's time for people who want to come to the United States to focus on skills so that they can contribute to the American economy right away. At the very end, the Republicans are in a unique position to really lead on this and really provide immigration reform that's long overdue. Number one, the Democratic leadership, Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer, have no clear message. We have been confused. I think at the end of the day, they've been using us as pawns. The second point that I want to bring is that they should have never shut down the government over DACA. We should have never held our American people and our military hostage. There's plenty of time on the table to fix this. March 5th is the deadline, and you can see Republicans already are willing to do something about it as we speak. And the last thing, point that I want to say is that, look, Democrats, they own all three branches of the government back in 2008 to 2011, and they still chose to do anything. So at this point, I'm quite Great frustrated point. With the Democratic leadership, what they've done.
All right. And then he goes on to explain personally why he has such radical views as opposed to most Dreamers. Let's listen.
I came in the U.S., when I was a year old. I grew up as a child. At one point, I was homeless. I grew up without a father in my life and also grew up in a rough neighborhood. But the reason I was able to overcome these challenges is because of the conservative values that I grew up with. And that's, number one, my faith in God. I believe in Jesus Christ, my Savior. Number two is my family. I also believe in value, prosperity, hope, and also working hard and standing on your own two feet. And look, at the end of the day, when I hear the national anthem, I get goosebumps all over me. I always pledge allegiance to the flag. And I would never disrespect it. I would never take a knee. And I would do anything to serve this country, to die for this country. And, all I need is a chance.
Hilario Yanez on Fox. And, of course, he is a dreamer. So then you say to yourself, well, I mean, what could we want more than an immigrant coming to this country who shares his views, who loves this country? That is the kind of immigrants that we want. I would say that still does not change the fact that if we legalize millions of Dreamers, we are taking on primarily a group of people who are not here because they love this country. And we are taking on an enormous financial burden. So that doesn't alter my view of this. What I guess I think would be the solution to this would be to allow a very tiny window of people to come in and even become citizens and have some process for that, but not a mass amnesty for 1.8 million immigrants. You can bet that in this discussion coming up this week, they're going to be asking for more than that. And you can bet that Mitch McConnell won't care. And certainly Paul Ryan won't either. We may see a replay of what we saw in the budget where they just roll over conservatives and do what they want, which is agree and cooperate with the left because they do agree and cooperate with the left. This is Sandy Rios in the Morning on AFR Talk.
The borrower is the slave of the lender. My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Corner. Congress has just passed a sweeping two-year budget agreement that increases spending by several hundred billion dollars. It includes $89 billion in supplemental disaster relief, $63 billion in other non-defense spending, $300 billion for the Pentagon, and a suspension of the debt limit. All this while we have $22 trillion in debt, and that number doesn't include unfunded mandates. The real national debt number is much, much higher. Fiscal responsibility no longer seems to be a priority for the Republican Party. Conservative and Republican are not synonymous terms.
Listen to the Hamilton Corner, weekdays from 5 to 6 p.m. Central on AFR. For more from Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
This is Tim Armstrong from the Worthy Walk radio program, inviting you to join us as we study the scriptures verse by verse each day, Monday through Friday at 6:30 p.m. Central Time here on American Family Radio. We will study the Word of God and learn to apply its truths to our lives each day. The Worthy Walk, Monday through Friday at 6:30 p.m. Central Time on American Family Radio.
Hello, I'm Gary Robey, host of Call to Worship, heard each Sunday on American Family Radio. This one-hour program will lead you in a special time of worship and praise. We will focus on God's Word, spoken, and in music. Call to Worship has a different topic each week as we glorify God together. Be sure to join us at 5 a.m. Central each Sunday for a Call to Worship right here on American Family Radio.
If you like trips where you have to plan everything, then maybe our tour is not for you. Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman with American Family Association and American Family Radio. Of course, I'm talking about our spiritual heritage tours of Washington, D.C., Mount Vernon, and then a separate trip to Williamsburg, Virginia. And guess what? We take care of everything. All you have to do is, as they say, show up. But we take these spiritual heritage tours twice a year, once in June and once in September. Stephen McDowell of the Providence Foundation, who is a historian, will be joining us for both tours, and he will tell you everything you need to know about the places, the times, the events that we will experience on these tours of Washington, D.C. and Williamsburg. For all the information, just go to the website spiritualheritagetours.com. That's spiritualheritagetours.com for everything.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Once upon a time, congressional Republicans campaigned promising to limit the size of government, prioritize maintaining our defenses, preserve the rule of law, and balance the federal budget. They were rewarded with control of both houses and the presidency in 2016. The latest budget deal suggests the majority of the Senate GOP and possibly most in the House now stand for very different things. Indeed, the McConnell-Ryan Republicans seem increasingly indistinguishable from the Schumer-Pelosi Democrats in wanting to grow government, tie necessary defense spending to unwarranted massive growth in domestic expenditures, reward law-breaking immigrants with amnesty, and authorize vast increases in federal budget deficits. This is a formula for routs this fall as the Republican base declines to turn out for Democrats in all but name. And with left-leaning amnestied aliens ultimately getting the vote, America risks inevitably and permanently becoming a one-party nation. This is Frank Affney.
Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
We actually want the Democratic memo out. We think it's ridiculous on the face of it. We think it's very political about how they attack myself. They attack Chairman Gowdy. They turn Carter Page into some super secret Russian spy. They talk about how Christopher Steele is a really, really good source when we know that he lied to the FBI. So we want this out. We don't know why they're not in this weekend redacting it so that we can get it back to the White House so the president can declassify it.
The president doesn't want the public to see the underlying facts. What is revealed in our memo are quotations from the very FISA application that really demonstrate just how misleading the Republicans have been. But the president doesn't want you to see these facts from the FISA application because it completely undermines his claim of vindication.
pieces of Devin Nunes, and before and after that, Adam Schiff. And of course, they're the dueling members of the national security team in the House. They have oversight of all the intelligence agencies, and you've watched them duel now in separate press appearances for months. And as I've said before, if people didn't hear me say this, I have to say to you, the left wants this to sound like some battle between parties, Democrats and Republicans. It is not. This is a battle between people who want to preserve the Constitution, the rule of law, the order of things, and people who want to undermine and destroy this country. It is as simple as that. I've told you that Adam Schiff has been supported, trained by George Soros' forces for a number of years, and he's just one person. Trust me, he's just one person, but he's well equipped. He does a great job of distorting. And of course, they're talking about the Democratic memo, which is 10 pages long, and President Trump announced that he's not releasing it because it contains a number of highly classified items. And what Devin Nunes is saying, that, and others are saying as well, is that the Democrats did that on purpose. They left in things they knew could not be made public so that they could say, let's see, President Trump released the Republican memo, and now he won't release our Democratic memo. But I think that that's, do you understand the games that are being played? It's just pretty amazing. Over the weekend, Chris Stewart, who is on the House, he's on the same Intelligence Committee with Devin Nunes and Adam Schiff. He's just not he's not one of the leaders of the committee. He did an interview with Judge Jeanine. He interjected some things that I think I would like for you to hear. Let's listen.
There's this thing that Director Comey surrounded himself with, and I'm going to say this, and I say it carefully, but it's true. He surrounded himself with political progressive hacks. That's exactly right. And they don't reflect the entity of the Department of Justice or the FBI. The FBI is by nature kind of center, maybe center right. These guys aren't like your typical FBI agent. And it wasn't just by chance that happened. Very clearly, they were selected by the director. I've been contacted by FBI agents. They're saying, thank you for doing this. We want you to protect the integrity of the agency.
All right. That was, again, Congressman Chris Stewart. On with Judge Jeanine. I know you couldn't hear her voice too much, but that's who was talking a little bit. So here's what he was just saying, was that FBI Director Comey surrounded himself with leftists in the FBI, people whose values, people who don't share values with or the rule of law, with the Justice Department. I have a lot more during the course of this week to unfold for you. I recognize that it's very complex, and I just ask you to stay with me. I mean, even if in general you understand it, it's important because we're watching things kind of come apart in terms of, I think the stories are unraveling. I actually am encouraged. I think that the truth is actually going to come out unless something really unexpected happens. Like, you know, all the conservative radio hosts, including myself, are, you know, struck down by lightning or some other sinister force, and Fox News is, you know, suddenly the plug is pulled. I actually think that some justice might be obtained. When Chris Stewart says that these people don't share the values of the FBI, he says the FBI is center right, and he said the people around at the leadership appointed by Comey are not that. I want to give you one example of that, because this was in Life Site News just, I think, yesterday. And here is what it says. Text messages released recently between FBI agent Peter Strzok and his mistress, FBI attorney Lisa Page, both of whom are anti-Trump, reveal them saying that they hate pro-lifers and want to find an excuse to cancel the 2016 March for Life in Washington. In what was intended to be a private message, Page told Strzok, "I truly hate these people," referring to pro-lifers attending the January 22nd March for Life in the nation's capital. Strzok then replied that the authorities should lie about a snow emergency to cancel the permit and stop the march. Here's the exact, I can read it. It's got some, it's always a challenge because of the profanity. Strzok, "Blanking marchers making traffic problems." Lisa Page, Yeah, some extremely offensive video screens set up in front of district. I truly hate these people. No support for the woman who actually has to spend the rest of her life rearing this child. But we care about life. Blank, blank. Stroke. Hey, I have an idea. Snow emergency. Cancel the permit. All right, so that's, and the ironically, of course, he was the one handling the Russia-Trump investigation. He was the one that interviewed Mrs. Clinton. You remember that? He was the one who interviewed Michael Flynn, Peter Stroke was. And Lisa Page was the attorney who worked with the one who just stepped out. I started saying McCarthy. Andrew McCabe. And she was the attorney with Andrew McCabe, so she's all over this as well. And another link that's interesting about this, you know, Fusion GPS, we've discussed a great deal. Glenn Simpson, Fusion GPS, that's the company that led the charge, were hired by the Democratic National Committee and Hillary Clinton's campaign to the FBI, it sounds like, to gather this dirt on Donald Trump, to discredit him as a candidate first and then as a candidate to try to take him out and then if he became president. So Fusion GPS is that company run by Glenn Simpson. And if you have not heard, I want to emphasize that Fusion GPS was also the company hired by Planned Parenthood to discredit David Dalyden's videos on the sale of baby body parts. Do you remember that dust up, that flap about how that the video was fake, it was false, with the elements of it were untrue because David had used a little picture of an embryo from some other source, and therefore they stirred up this story as though David Dalyden had lied about the whole thing or was making it up, or they didn't say that, but they used that portion to say the whole thing has no credibility. That was Fusion GPS. And so this was the group that the FBI thought was a great group, one they wanted to work with and pay money to. At least the top echelon did. And that gives you an idea of how far afield the top echelon of the FBI was. But I have to say that I think some good things are happening. I'm reading from an outlet. This is a guy who calls himself Sundance. I have used his information before. Now, some of this is speculation on his part, but he's very clued in, and he certainly knows a lot of things that the rest of us don't know. And his conclusion, there's one person whose name we have not heard. I mean, we've heard Andrew McCabe and the agent Stroke and Lisa Page and James Comey and you fill in the blanks. But one person who was actually key to all of this because he was the head of the FBI counterintelligence operation is Bill Priestap. And his name has been notably absent from the reports, from stuff coming out of the IG, who's Inspector General, who is going to be releasing his report, we think, within a month, probably in March. Bill Priestap's name is missing all the time. I even heard my husband wonder about that. Why aren't we hearing his name? And so Sundance, this guy who writes by that name, says that he believes the reason is because Bill Priestap is cooperating with the investigation. And he bases this on an interview that James Comey did before Congress, which is very interesting. I'm not going to play it for you because it's down in the weeds. But he's interrogated by a member of Congress, a female who I'd never heard of before. She does a fabulous job. And she asks him why they did not brief the leaders of this gang of, I think it's the Gang of Eight in Congress, the ones that actually oversee, they're the only four that oversee the intelligence agencies. They are supposed to, by statute, to brief members of Congress when they are doing highly sensitive intelligence gathering information campaigns. And this attempt to surveil and monitor Donald Trump and his associates definitely fell in that category, and yet the FBI didn't notify that committee in Congress. They didn't say anything about it. And he was asked why, James Comey was asked why they didn't do that. And he said, well, I didn't because the head of FBI counterintelligence told me not to. So Sundance thinks that was James Comey throwing Bill Priestap under the bus. And that Bill Priestap, this is a speculation now, but it's probably highly likely, that Bill Priestap, instead of being thrown under the bus, started to cooperate with the investigation. And so That's why his name has not been mentioned. And so, according to Sundance, he says the game is over. The jig is up. Victory is certain. The trench was ignited. The enemy funneled themselves into the valley. All bait was taken. Everything from here on out is simply mopping up the details. All suspicions confirmed. He says, why has Devin Nunes been so confident? Why did all the GOP HPSCI, that's the Intelligence Committee, members happily allow the Democrats to create a 10-page narrative? All questions are answered. All right, so that's that. Oh, there's more. I want to share with you Robert Charles, was the former Assistant Secretary of State. We can at least play this clip because he was on Fox as well, and he had some incredible things to say. Let's just listen.
I do think every American should read both the memo and the opposition memo. Mm-hmm. But, you know, in the grand scheme of things, it's odd to hear opposition to the release of this memo from people like Adam Schiff, because Adam Schiff has spent 9 terms arguing that there should be greater openness at the FISA court. He even wanted outside counsel to be able to present to that court. So I think in the biggest, you know, there's always a wait. There's a moment after which the public right to know outweighs what you call sort of the endemic national security interest. And the national security interest actually tips in favor of the public right to know. And I think that's where we are right now.
All right,
so
Robert Charles.
35,000.
Let's stop because I want to hear the last clip. He says that hardly any FISA request is ever turned down. And he said that's why what makes this really, really curious that the FBI's original request was turned down. Here's Robert Graves.
Not at all. Indeed, I think they did use it. And that's what the memo suggests. It goes to the heart of what is probable cause before the FISA court. 3 things are required. You have to be targeting a foreign intelligence agent. You have to be looking for either espionage or terrorism. And you have to think that a crime has been committed. Now, I'm not sure I see that in this memo. The memo doesn't suggest any of those things. But let's just imagine, they did all exist. You have a major problem, and that is this, what they call the fruit of the poisonous tree. If a Fourth Amendment violation occurred, and there was literally a constitutional violation by the use of this false information to get the warrant, then the fruit of the tree is all the evidence that comes from that in the future surveillance warrants. And so really you've got a major problem. There are exceptions to that rule, but none of them fit here. McCabe has said that without that Steele dossier, they wouldn't have granted the warrant. That's number one. Number two, the only corroboration was a news story that was actually sourced to Steele. You know, ironically, there is no separate way to get that dossier. That's another exception. And finally, the good faith exception actually doesn't work because they knew that this information had come from a politically financed, Hillary Clinton financed source.
That was Robert Charles. Again, he was the former Assistant Secretary of State. He said so much more to say. And I have so much more to tell you. I'm trying to decide what to try to include this morning. But it looks like the judge Contreras, who was on the FISA court and recused himself suddenly from the Michael Flynn case, it sounds like, from what I'm reading, that Michael Flynn, as I've said to you before, was tricked into pleading guilty. It sounds like the agents involved in this may have altered the official FBI form in which they record the conversations. And it sounds like the Justice Department official who was with Peter Strzok during that interview has now stepped down from justice. And as I said to you last week, we think that he has a different opinion about that interview with Michael Flynn that might become critical evidence. It's just an amazing story. You cannot make this stuff up. I wish it was make-believe. This is Sandy Rios in the Morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.